Conrad urged Selena toward the ladder.
You and Arturo get in the buggy and get ready to head out in a hurry.
They're too close. We'd never get away from them.
She had a point, Conrad decided. They would have a running fight on their hands. It would be better to make a stand where they had some cover.
All right. If the train stops and there's time to get you on it, we will. Then Arturo and I can keep Leatherwood busy while the train pulls out. If you make it on board, find the conductor and tell him Conrad Browning said to make sure you get to San Francisco safely.
Who are you? Your name carries that much weight with the railroad?
Don't worry about it. Just do what I told you.
All right. I need my saddlebags, though. Everything I own in the world is in them.
Hurry, then.
While Selena climbed down, he went to the edge of the platform.
Arturo, pitch my rifle up here.
Are we going to make a stand?
Conrad glanced at the train and the dust cloud.
It's starting to look like it.
Arturo fetched Conrad's Winchester and tossed it into the air next to the platform. Conrad reached out and caught the rifle by the barrel. It wouldn't be long until the riders were in range. He wished he could see them a little better. He didn't want to start blazing away at them without being absolutely certain they were Jackson Leatherwood and the Avenging Angels. He glanced down and saw Selena taking her saddlebags off her horse. She slung them over her shoulder and went to the corner of the shed where she could see the train and the approaching riders. Conrad could tell by the stiff stance of her slim body how tense she was. The dust cloud suddenly changed direction and veered to the east toward Navajo Wash. For a moment, Conrad couldn't figure out what they were doing. The realization burst on his brain as the riders closed in on the tracks and began shooting. Leatherwood was making a smart move. Having figured out his quarry was at the water tank, he wanted the train to highball on through without stopping, even without slowing down, leaving Conrad, Selena, and Arturo stuck there. Conrad bit back a curse. The range was long, but he leveled the Winchester and started firing at the horsemen. He still couldn't be completely sure they were Leatherwood and the other gunmen, but their attack on the train made it clear they weren't on the same side as Conrad and his companions. If he could force them to break off their attack, the train still might stop. The locomotive surged ahead faster, barreling along the tracks at top speed. The gunmen had accomplished their goal. They threw a few more shots at the train just to speed it along, then slowed their horses and began to fall back. They paralleled the tracks and rode steadily toward the water tank. The train passed them, and suddenly the riders lunged their mounts across the tracks and galloped alongside the caboose where Conrad couldn't see them. Even running flat out, the horses couldn't keep up with the train for more than a few moments, but that was long enough to shield the men until the train reached the water stop and roared on past the tank.
Get behind the shed!
Conrad retreated along the curve of the tank as the train flashed past. Smoke billowed from the locomotive's diamond-shaped stack and stung his eyes and nose, making it difficult to see and breathe. Dropping to one knee, he brought the rifle to his shoulder as he caught a glimpse of Leatherwood through a gap in the smoke. The man's ugly face was unmistakable. Leatherwood spotted Conrad's movement and pointed the gun in his hand upward.
Up there on the tank! Kill him!
Conrad squeezed off a shot first, but Leatherwood jerked his horse aside and returned fire. Conrad took aim with his rifle again. From down below, we heard Arturo joining in on the fight. Conrad saw one of the Avenging Angels send his horse leaping across the tracks and knew the man was trying to get behind the shed.
Be careful of the girl!
Tossing his empty rifle to the ground, Conrad wrapped his arms around the metal spout. He slid down a couple of feet, then let go and dropped to the ground next to the thick beams that served as legs under the tank. He landed lightly and his Colt flickered out as he spotted the man who had just ridden across the tracks. 10 feet away, the man swung his gun toward Conrad, but Conrad fired first. His bullet ripped through the man's Adam's apple and he toppled backward out of the saddle as blood fountained from his ruined throat. More shots came from behind the shed. Conrad worried about Arturo and Selena, but couldn't go to their aid. Throwing himself to the side, he landed behind one of the thick legs as Leatherwood started shooting at him again. Conrad took aim with his Colt, but before he could shoot, someone else shot a rifle at the leader of the Avenging Angels. Conrad glanced over his shoulder and saw Arturo crouched at the corner of the shed, firing at Leatherwood. His heart leaped at the realization that Arturo must have been able to deal with the man who had ridden around the shed to attack him. His friend was all right, or at least still in the fight. Now, they outnumbered Leatherwood. The scar-faced Triggerite figured that out, too. Suddenly, he whirled his horse and put the spurs to it. The animal leaped into a gallop and headed to the north, away from the water tank. Conrad and Arturo both fired after him, but Leatherwood never slowed down. Arturo took a couple more pot shots at Leatherwood, but Conrad knew the chances of him hitting anything were small. Arturo lowered the rifle and looked over at Conrad.
Sir, are you injured?
No, I'm fine. How about you?
I am not, what is the word, ventilated. But not for lack of trying on the part of that man who galloped around the shed. He hesitated when he shouldn't have, though. Probably out of fear that one of his errant shots would strike Miss Webster. And I was able to drill him.
Good for you. Did you make sure he was dead?
Yes. He is deceased.
Conrad picked up his rifle, then started around the shed to check on Selena. He assumed she was all right, otherwise Arturo would have said something about her being hurt, but he wanted to see that with his own eyes. She met him when he was only partway there, hurrying around the shed and unexpectedly throwing herself in his arms.
Oh!
Instinctively, he held her and felt the way her body trembled against his.
Oh, so much shooting. I thought for sure I was gonna die.
The thought crossed my mind, too. For all of us.
She lifted her head so that she could look up at him.
What about Leatherwood?
He's gone. Once he was the only one left, he didn't have the stomach for a fight anymore.
He'll be back. He'll get some more men and he'll come after us. He'll never give up, and neither will Father Agony.
That won't matter. By then we'll have a good lead on them and they won't be able to catch us. We can reach the Nevada line in a couple days.
You don't think that will stop them, do you? It won't make any difference.
Sure it will. We'll find another place you can get on the train. There'll be another westbound tomorrow or the next day.
Oh, you're probably right. It's just that I'll believe it when I see it.
Conrad didn't blame her for being doubtful. They had been very lucky to keep her out of Leatherwood's hands so far. Sooner or later, that good fortune was bound to run out. There were two more bodies to bury, and since Leatherwood had already fled, Conrad figured there was time to do that. After he was done with the grave, he noticed Selena's saddlebags lying against the shed's rear wall. She'd had them draped over her shoulder when she and Arturo had retreated back there. Conrad supposed they had slipped off during the shooting, and she'd been so upset she'd forgotten about them. Without really thinking about it, he bent to pick them up and put them back in the buggy. A frown creased his forehead as he straightened and felt the weight of the saddlebags. They were heavier than they would have been if Selena had filled them with food and other supplies before she left Juniper Canyon. At that moment, she hurried around the corner of the shed, only to stop short at the sight of Conrad standing there holding the saddlebags.
What are you doing?
I saw your saddlebags, and I thought I'd do you a favor by putting them back in the buggy.
Conrad shook them up and down a little.
I figured they were full of provisions.
Selena came toward him and stretched out a hand.
I'll take those.
Not just yet. I think I'll have a look in here first.
You can't! You don't have any right!
Arturo and I have risked our lives several times for you, and as you pointed out, we haven't even known you for a full day yet. I think that gives me the right to know exactly who and what we've been fighting for.
Please.
Conrad ignored her. He unfastened the catch on one of the bags, opened the flap, and turned it upside down. A stream of gold and silver coins cascaded out and landed on the sandy ground.
Are you satisfied now?
Conrad got a good look at the coins. He saw $5 and $10 coins and an abundance of gold double eagles worth $20 apiece. There had to be close to $1,000 lying on the ground at his feet, maybe more. Judging by the weight of the other saddlebag, it contained just as much.
So Father Agony didn't send his avenging angels after you because he's determined to marry you.
You had no right to do that, and you have no right to judge me either. You don't know what it's been like living there for the past few years, knowing that, oh, that toad was determined to have me. You don't know what it's like to be sold as a piece of meat by your own father.
Arturo came around the shed with a puzzled look on his face.
Is there some problem? Oh...
His eyes widened at the sight of the pile of coins on the ground.
Oh, my.
Conrad dropped the saddlebags next to the money.
That's why you wouldn't let either of us tend to your horse. You didn't want us picking up those bags and realizing something was in them besides supplies. You were afraid we wouldn't help you if we knew you were a thief.
I tell you, it wasn't like that. I earned that money. I earned it in fear and loathing. I had to stand with a smile on my face while Hyssop leered at me and patted me on the head and told me that someday I would be his wife. And my father stood right there smiling, too.
I'm sorry you had to go through that. And I don't mean to judge you. Lord knows I've done plenty of things myself that I'm not proud of. But you could have told us about this. That way we would have known Leatherwood and the others were after you because of something other than Hyssop's wounded pride.
What difference would that have made? Leatherwood still would have tried to kill you and take me back to Juniper Canyon, no matter what the reason.
Conrad had to admit she had a point. Once the lines were drawn and Leatherwood regarded him and Arturo as enemies, the violence would have played out the same way as long as the two of them tried to protect Selena. And Conrad also had to admit he wouldn't have abandoned her and allowed Leatherwood to take her back to Hyssop even if he had known about the money. He gestured toward the coins.
Just to be clear, you did steal this from Hyssop, is that right?
Yes, I did. And I'd do it again.
You don't have any money your mother saved to help you get away?
No. My father always kept her on too tight a rein to allow anything like that.
You didn't happen to kill anybody when you stole the money and ran off, did you?
Oh, of course not! I wouldn't do a thing like that!
Maybe not. But you've already done more than I would have expected just to look at you. That's why one of those gunmen reacted like you did when I called you an innocent young woman. He said I was a fool for thinking that.
Oh, you're not, Conrad. Well, this is the only thing I've kept from you. And I only did it because I was afraid. Think about it. You don't know me, but I don't really know you either. It wasn't that I was afraid you wouldn't help me. I was afraid if you knew about the money, you'd take it for yourselves and leave me for Leatherwood.
Miss Webster has a point, sir. For all she knew when she met us, we might have been outlaws. Utter scoundrels. Cads. Bounders.
I get the idea, Arturo. Selena, I don't like being lied to, but I don't suppose you really did that. You just didn't tell us the whole truth. And you're right that it wouldn't have changed anything. So I guess I'm sorry. This money is your business, not ours. I'll pick it up.
Well, that's all right. I'll get it. You have other things to do.
She hurried forward and dropped to her knees next to the saddlebags and the spilled coins.
You're still going to take me to Nevada, or wherever you can put me on the train?
That's right. Leatherwood and Hyssop won't get their hands on you if I can help it.
Thank you. I swear, I won't lie to you again.
Conrad just nodded and walked away. By the middle of the day, the three travelers had put the water stop at Navajo Wash far behind them. They headed west, following the railroad. No more trains had come along, westbound or eastbound. The landscape became even more arid, fully deserving of the name desert. Occasionally, clumps of grass and twisted, stunted mesquite trees were the only vegetation. Those plants didn't provide much color. Everywhere Conrad looked, his eyes saw only browns, tans, grays, and now and then a splash of red sandstone. He spotted a hawk gliding along high overhead in a silver-blue sky. A lizard scuttled out of their path and into some rocks. Those were the only signs of life as the threesome made their way toward the mountains. They had too many horses to tie them to the buggy, so Conrad hazed the animals along like a remuda on a cattle drive. Not that he had ever actually been on a cattle drive. His father had, though, and Frank Morgan had told him stories about those days. After the Civil War, Frank had wanted nothing more than to return to the ranch in Texas where he'd worked as a cowboy and lived a peaceful life there. Fate had intervened when a bully who fancied himself a fast gun had forced him into a fight. That was when Frank and the rest of the world had found out just how fast and accurate he was with the six gun. A reputation was born, and nothing had ever been the same for Frank Morgan after that. Conrad knew the feeling. He had been through a number of life-altering events of his own in the past few years, starting with the day his mother had introduced him to Frank and broken the news that the famous gunfighter was Conrad's real father. Sometimes a fatalistic gloom gripped him, and he believed everything had been predetermined from that moment. His marriage to Rebel, her tragic death, his transformation from a businessman into a deadly gunman who had literally killed more men than he could remember. Although he never lost any sleep over the lives he had ended, he never shot to kill except in self-defense or to save the life of someone else. It seemed like he ought to at least be able to recall the men he had killed. Their deaths tended to blend into a haze of powder smoke and blood.
Conrad? What's wrong? You look like your thoughts are a million miles away.
Not that far. I'm fine.
Conrad glanced at the sky where the sun was almost directly overhead and beating down with a fierce heat.
We need to find some shade and stop for a while. Let the horses rest and cool off.
I'm not sure where you're going to find any shade out here. The last place I saw land this flat and empty was down in New Mexico.
Yeah, this is almost as bad. Maybe we can find another trestle and stop under it for a while. There's some rocks big enough to give us some shade.
That hope appeared to be an empty one. Even though they stopped from time to time to rest the horses, the heat drained man and beast alike of their energy. Arturo and Selena had it better because at least they had the meager shade provided by the buggy's canopy. But the sun was getting to them, too.
I never understood how it can be so hot during the day in this region, and yet so cold at night.
That's the way the desert is. I think it must have something to do with how dry the air is. There's nothing to hold in the heat.
Yeah, you're probably right. That doesn't, however, make me feel any better.
It didn't make any of them feel better. Another hour crept by. Weariness gripped Conrad and made him sway in the saddle. He fought to stay awake. Suddenly he spotted something ahead of them, lifted his head. He raised himself in the stirrups to get a better look. A narrow pinnacle of rock jutted into the air. He pointed at it.
Look there!
That must be what they call Finger Rock. I've heard of it, but I've never been here.
They could call it Thumb Rock, or Toe Rock as far as I'm concerned. As long as it provides some shade, I'm glad to see it.
With renewed energy, they kept moving toward the promised shelter. For every yard they covered, Finger Rock seemed to recede an equal distance, but gradually the gap narrowed. They reached it in mid-afternoon. The rock was 20 feet wide at its base, tapering to a much narrower point 60 feet in the air. The shade it cast on its eastern side was welcome, and the air felt almost blessedly cool. After Conrad dismounted, he unsaddled all the horses, including Selena's. Her saddlebags were in the back of the buggy now that there was no longer any need to keep their contents secret. Conrad didn't think any of the horses would stray very far from the shade, so he hobbled them but didn't picket them.
We'll stay here until after dark. That'll give us a chance to rest and cool off. We can probably travel most of the night. It won't be hard to follow the railroad even in the dark.
What about Leatherwood?
How long would it take him to get back to Juniper Canyon from Navajo Wash?
At least half a day, I suppose.
And once he got there, he'd have to round up more men and fresh horses. That would take a while. So at the very best, he couldn't have started after us again until a little while ago. If anything happened to delay him, he might not be on the trail yet. We'll be able to stay ahead of him. Anyway, we had to stop and rest the horses. Pretty soon, they wouldn't have been able to go on. And then we really would have been stuck.
I suppose you're right. I'll just be glad when I know I'm somewhere where he can't get at me anymore.
Conrad didn't say it, but he knew that wasn't really possible. They could make it very difficult for Leatherwood to find Selena, practically impossible, in fact, but the chance that he might track her down would always exist. A man who devoted all his time and energy, even his very life, to something was hard to stop. The question was whether or not Jackson Leatherwood was that stubborn. Selena sat down, with her back propped against the rock pinnacle, and within a few minutes, she was asleep.
You might as well get some shut-eye too, Arturo.
What about you? Neither of us has gotten much sleep in the past 24 hours.
That's true, but I'll be all right. You doze for a while, and then I'll wake you.
Very well.
Arturo took a blanket from the buggy and spread it on the ground to sit on. He folded another blanket and stuck it behind his head to use as a pillow when he leaned back against the rock. Tipping his derby down over his face, he folded his arms across his chest and soon dozed off. Conrad hunkered on his heels and sipped from one of the canteens. He didn't drink much. He didn't know when they would find more. He was still a little irritated Selena had hidden that money from him. On the other hand, he understood why she had done it. He couldn't blame her for not completely trusting him and Arturo. Growing up in a Mormon community, she might have been taught all Gentiles were not trustworthy. Conrad didn't know much about what they believed. Like most people, he was aware Mormon men sometimes had multiple wives, but that was about the extent of his knowledge. He struggled to stay awake for a couple of hours while Arturo and Selena slept. Then, quietly, so as not to disturb Selena, he shook Arturo awake and took his place. In two more hours, the sun would be down and they could think about moving on. Once everyone was up, they ate a little, gave the horses some water, then packed everything away. By the time they were ready to go, the last of the light from the sun was gone. The glow of a million stars had replaced it. The heat of the day disappeared as the cool night breeze sprung up. Conrad drove the extra horses along the railroad right-of-way while Arturo and Selena followed in the buggy. The miles fell behind them quickly. After several hours, low, dark humps appeared in front of them. Hills, Conrad realized. Several small mountain ranges stretched across the isolated country along the Utah-Nevada border. After the flat, arid desert, the higher country would be a relief. On the other side of the border, the terrain dropped again to the vast Humboldt Basin, which was as bad or worse than the country in Utah, but at least there were a few small towns along the rail line. They would be able to put Selena on a train bound for San Francisco. As Conrad had mused earlier, once Selena reached the city by the bay, she wouldn't be completely out of Leatherwood's reach, but at least he would have a lot harder time finding her. Conrad planned to send a wire to his lawyers, Claudius Turnbuckle and John J. Stafford, asking them to help Selena. He was sure they would find a safe place for her.
I've never been this far away from home. In fact, there are times when I ask myself if there really was a world outside of Juniper Canyon. The elders like to teach that the world beyond the bounds of our home is nothing but a wasteland.
That's a good way to keep the young people from getting restless and wanting to leave, I suppose.
I'm sure that's part of it. But the way my people have been persecuted, I'm sure sometimes it does seem like the rest of the world is a savage, terrible place.
From everything Conrad had heard, the Mormons had indeed suffered from persecution in the past. But they had done their own share of persecuting, too, including more than one massacre of Gentiles who didn't share their beliefs. He had no interest in arguing religion with Selena or anybody else, so he didn't say anything. Just kept pushing the little horse herd westward. The heavens were gray with dawn in the east, and the moon was a glimmering crescent hanging in the western sky when they stopped again. For the past hour, they had been following the railroad through rugged, humpbacked hills. When they came to a dry wash that cut through those hills, Conrad called a halt.
I don't want to try to get the buggy through that wash until we can see better. Those banks can be tricky. We don't want to bust a wheel or an axle. Besides, the horses can use some rest.
So can I.
Conrad and Arturo picketed the horses to make sure the animals didn't stray. While they were tending to that chore, Conrad suddenly smelled smoke and turned to see that Selena had gathered some broken greasewood branches and kindled a fire. The flames leaped brightly. Conrad strode over to the fire.
What are you doing?
Why, I thought the both of you might like some coffee this morning. Besides, it's a little chilly again.
Yes, but you didn't even try to hide that fire.
Conrad started kicking dirt on the flames.
Well, what are you doing?
Putting it out so Leatherwood won't be able to follow it right to us.
He glanced off toward the flats east of them.
That is, if he hasn't already seen it.
Well, but I thought you said he'd be a long way behind us.
You can see these hills for a long way out there. If Leatherwood pushed his men hard during the day yesterday and rode on through the night, he could be close enough behind us to have spotted that fire.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm sorry, Conrad. I didn't even think of that. I just wanted to do something nice for the two of you.
Chances are he didn't see it. Fire was pretty small and it didn't burn for very long, but there's no point in running that risk when we don't have to. I'll build a fire pit from some rocks. That way we can have some coffee and some hot food without giving away where we are.
Well, you're right. Of course you're right. From now on, I won't do anything like that without asking you first.
Conrad went back to the horses, and when he was finished with them, he built that fire pit, stacking up rocks in a ring until he could start a blaze inside it without the flames being seen. Arturo took over from there, boiling coffee and frying some hot cakes and bacon. After the hectic, dangerous day and a half they'd had, it felt mighty good to sit and eat and wash the food down with hot coffee.
Before the day is over, we'll be in Nevada. Might even find a town by then and get you on the train. Should be a westbound along sometime today.
I can't thank you and Arturo enough for everything you've done. If not for the two of you, well, Leatherwood and his men would have taken me back to...
Conrad held up a hand to stop her. He lifted his head and listened intently. He had heard something out of place, like the stealthy scrape of boot leather on rocky ground. He dropped his plate and started to his feet. His hand streaked to his gun. As the Colt came out of the holster, men appeared in the gray dawn light, surrounding the camp and leveling rifles at him and Arturo.
Don't move. Drop that gun, mister.
Please, Conrad, do what he tells you.
Yeah, You better listen to my wife, mister.
Slowly, Conrad turned his head to look over his shoulder at Selena. She had drawn a small pistol from under that loose man's shirt she wore and had the gun pointed at him.
Well, hell. Starting that fire wasn't just a thoughtless accident. It was a signal.
The gun in Selena's hand didn't waver as she came to her feet.
Well, that's right. I'm sorry, Conrad.
Save your apologies.
I'm confused. I thought you were supposed to marry Elder Agonistes Hyssop, Miss Webster.
She can't marry anybody. She's already married to me. Maybe not as far as Father Agony or the rest of his followers are concerned, but we had our own ceremony, and it's good enough for me.
I'll handle this, Daniel.
Selena circled the fire, keeping the pistol in her hand, trained on Conrad.
I'd really feel better if you dropped that gun.
Conrad had done a quick head count of the men who had snuck up on the camp. There were 8 of them. He had gone up against 4-1 odds before and lived through those fights, but it wasn't really 4-1 because Arturo couldn't account for as many men as Conrad could. A gun battle would get them both killed, and despite Selena's betrayal, he didn't want to endanger her life from any stray bullets. With that thought in mind, he bent slowly and placed his Colt on the ground. Then he straightened and stepped back away from it.
That's good.
The man called Daniel motioned with his rifle.
Get over there with your friend, mister, and leave your Winchester where it is.
Arturo stood up and joined Conrad.
Are you going to kill us?
Of course not. You two help me. I owe you my life. Do you hear me, Daniel? I don't want them hurt.
That'll be up to them.
In the growing light, Conrad could see that Daniel was a little older than Selena, probably in his early 20s. Slender and medium height, he had dark hair and a wisp of dark beard. His companions, all roughly the same age, wore range clothes and battered hats. They all carried Winchesters or Henry rifles, and several of them had holstered revolvers on their hips. Judging by their faces, they weren't true hard cases, but they all had the stamp of hard living on them. It showed up in gaunt, hollow cheeks and haunted eyes.
Well, you'll cooperate, won't you, Conrad?
I don't much like being played for a fool, but Arturo and I aren't interested in causing trouble for you. You ought to know that by now. Just take your horse and go with your friends. We'll go on about our business.
Selena turned to Daniel.
That's fair enough, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't much like the way you call him Conrad. Like the two of you are old friends or something.
They are my friends. Didn't you hear me? Conrad and Arturo saved my life more than once. If not for them, Jackson Leatherwood and the rest of Father Agony's avenging angels would have caught me and taken me back to Juniper Canyon.
Well then, I guess I should be thanking them. Why don't you introduce us properly?
All right. This is Conrad Browning and Arturo Vincenzo.
Conrad's name obviously didn't mean anything to the young man.
Nobody's killing anybody. The killing is over and done with, right, Daniel?
Sure. Whatever you say, Selena. I just want you to be happy.
Conrad wasn't sure Daniel meant that. In fact, he felt an instinctive dislike and distrust of the young man.
You told your friend who we are, but you didn't introduce him and these other fellas to us.
Well, we sure don't want to be impolite. My name's Daniel Kingman. Me and the rest of these boys, we call ourselves the Outcast Saints.
Daniel and the others? We're forced to leave Juniper Canyon.
Selena had lowered her gun, but Kingman and the others still had their rifles pointed at Conrad and Arturo.
They voiced opposition to some of Elder Hyssop's decisions, so he accused them of being blasphemers.
Yes, but the main reason Father Agony wanted to get rid of us is because we're young. We didn't want to wait around while he and the rest of the older men took all the girls as their wives. And they sure as hell didn't want the girls deciding they'd like to have younger men for husbands.
It all sounded foreign to Conrad, almost incomprehensible that people could live like that. They had a right to their own religious beliefs, of course, but to drive out their own young men, well, it just didn't make sense. From what he'd heard about Elder Agonistes Hyssop, he wasn't too surprised the man wanted to get rid of anyone who disagreed with him or represented a threat to his plans.
After Daniel and the others were banished, I decided I had to leave Juniper Canyon, too. I just had to wait until the time was right.
Until you could get your hands on Father Agony's treasure. Did you get it, Selena?
I got it. But it's not really what I would call treasure, Daniel. It's $2,000, maybe a little more.
When you're broke and hungry, $2,000 sounds like a treasure to me. Where is it? I want to see it.
In my saddlebags, behind the seat in the buggy.
Kingman turned to one of the other men.
Fetch them, Ollie.
The man called Ollie, who was big and had a shock of blonde hair under a pushed-back hat, went to the buggy and came back with the saddlebags dangling from a ham-like fist. He held them out.
Here they are, Dan.
Kingman tucked his rifle under his arm and snatched the saddlebags from Ollie. He opened one of the pouches and plunged his hand inside. When he brought it out, coins flowed through his fingers and fell back into the leather bag.
Beautiful.
Conrad thought there was something seriously wrong with a man who would call a bunch of coins beautiful when he had a woman like Selena Webster standing next to him. But to each his own, he supposed. The men had relaxed a little, and the feeling of impending violence wasn't as thick in the air.
All right. You've got the girl and the money. You've got what you wanted. Why don't you let Arturo and me get our guns, and we'll be on our way. You can even take those extra horses with you.
Kingman closed and fastened the saddlebags and tossed them back to Ollie.
Oh, we'll take the horses, all right. And the buggy. And you two as well. You're either coming with us, or we'll bury you right here.
Daniel, no! There's no reason to do that. They helped me. They can't do anything to hurt us.
He made a curt gesture, and the rest of the outcast saints lifted their rifles again.
Oh, no. What if Leatherwood catches up to them, and they tell them you're with me? What if they tell them which way we went?
Leatherwood tried to kill them twice. They don't have any reason to cooperate with him.
Not even to get back at you for lying to them? Or to save themselves from being tortured? Because you know Leatherwood is perfectly capable of that if he gets his hands on them. Anyway, how do you know what these two might do? You barely know them.
I know they saved my life.
And I appreciate that.
Kingman turned to his men.
Get their guns. Tie their hands and put them on horses. We need to get out of here. We've already wasted too much time. I can feel Leatherwood out there.
So could Conrad. He wasn't sure who was the bigger threat, the fanatical avenging angel or the bitter young outcast.
Sir, how are we going to respond to this provocation?
Play along with them for now. This isn't our fight. Maybe after a while they'll realize we don't want any part of it.
A short while later, after the outcast saints gathered up Conrad's and Arturo's guns and tied their hands behind their backs, they lifted them both into their saddles. The sun was up and flooding the hills with golden light. A couple men hitched the team to the buggy and led the animals across the railroad tracks. Once the vehicle was north of the tracks, one of the men climbed into it to handle the reins.
I'm not the best rider in the world, but I'll do my best to keep up.
You'd better. You won't like it if we have to leave you behind.
I really wish you'd stop threatening them.
Of course.
Everyone mounted up and rode northward through the hills. The young man called Ollie led the way. Conrad and Arturo were in the middle of the group with their captors bunched around them so they couldn't get away. Conrad didn't intend to try. He still hoped he could get Kingman to listen to reason. Even if he wasn't able to do that, maybe Selena could. He noticed that she was now dropping back beside him.
I'm sorry about this, Conrad. I truly am. I never intended for you and Arturo to get hurt. When I escaped from Juniper Canyon, I didn't have any idea I would run into you.
Just out of curiosity, what was your plan? Were you supposed to rendezvous with your friends here in these hills?
That's right. I was going to follow the railroad until I reached the hills, and Daniel and his friends would be waiting and watching for my signal fire. I hoped I would be a lot farther away from the canyon before anyone discovered I was gone. Somehow, Elder Hyssop found out almost right away and sent Leatherwood and the others after me. That almost ruined everything. It would have, if not for you.
Too bad that doesn't seem to mean anything to Kingman. He's not happy about you being back here talking to me.
Conrad had seen the young man cast several suspicious glances over his shoulder since Selena had dropped back instead of riding beside him. The glare Kingman sent his way was dark and menacing.
I don't care. Daniel can't tell me who to talk to or who my friends are. I won't let him hurt you. He's a really good man, Conrad. You just don't know him. All the outcast saints are fine young men. They weren't treated fairly by Father Agony and the older men in the community.
Life has a habit of being unfair to folks.
She didn't have any response to that. The air quickly warmed as the sun rose in the sky, but it wasn't as blazingly hot as it had been out on the desert. By midday, the riders had left the railroad far behind and were climbing into a range of rugged, snow-capped mountains. They were now resting their horses.
These are the Prophet Mountains. The name's appropriate, don't you think? But there's no place here for Joseph Smith or Brigham Young or even Father Agony. We're all our own prophets, and no man is going to lord it over another.
Kingman might say that, Conrad thought, but he was quick to give orders to the other men, and there was no doubt who was in charge. There was an old saying about the corrupting nature of power. Conrad had a hunch he was seeing living proof of it in Daniel Kingman. The group pushed on, and by the middle of the afternoon, horses and riders were climbing a zigzag path that rose to a pass between two peaks. The mountains weren't terribly tall, but they were rugged enough that the pass appeared to be the only way through them. Selena brought her horse alongside Conrad's again and turned in the saddle to point to the right across an expanse of arid, blindingly white flats that stretched for miles before they ended in another range of mountains.
Juniper Canyon is in those mountains on the other side of the flats.
They're what, 20 miles away?
That's right. We've come the long way around and made a big circle. It would never occur to Father Agony that Daniel and the others are right here, just across the salt flats, because nobody crosses that stretch. The flats are too dry and too dangerous.
Conrad and I traveled through a terrible desert down in New Mexico called the Jornada del Muerto. The name means Journey of the Dead Man. Although some people take it to mean simply the Journey of Death, which is a good name for it. It's very dry and much more extensive than these flats appear to be. It takes days to make the journey.
The crust of the salt on the flats can crack under too much weight. And when it does, it cuts the horse's hooves so badly, the horses can't walk. Well, that's why no one tries to cross it. They would probably wind up on foot and stranded.
I see. Well, there's dried lava much like that in the Jornada del Muerto.
It's not a competition. Both places are pretty bad. We can probably leave it at that.
They reached the pass and rode through it. Conrad hadn't been impressed by much of anything he'd seen in Utah. But as the pass opened up into a valley that fell away on the far side of the mountains, he was surprised. Instead of the ugly browns and tans that met the eye everywhere else, the valley below him was painted with the verdant green of grass and trees, and decorated with splashes of color from wildflowers. Kingman and Selena had reined in, and Conrad, Arturo, and the other men followed suit. Kingman turned in his saddle to smirk at the prisoners.
Welcome to the Valley of the Outcast Saints.
Where does the water come from? There has to be a better source of water than usual around here to account for all this vegetation.
That's right. There's several springs on this side of the pass. Streams they form run through the valley. I've been exploring the place for months, ever since we came here. And I'm not sure I've even found all of them yet. The ones I have found look like someone did some blasting around them in the past to enlarge the openings and increase the flow of water. Miners, maybe, or somebody who wanted to start a ranch here. I've been tempted to try to improve them even more.
But you're afraid the explosions might block off the springs instead. You'd need to be sure the boreholes are placed correctly.
You know something about blasting? Maybe we'll talk about it while you're here. Might as well get some use out of you since we'll be feeding you.
Kingman waved the group forward.
Come on!
With Selena trotting her horse alongside his, Kingman led the way down a trail that turned into a road running through the center of the valley. Conrad saw plowed fields with crops growing in them. He spotted fruit trees bearing colorful fruit. Water made all the difference, turning the little corner of wilderness into something of an oasis. It was hard to believe only a few miles away over the pass lay a hellish, barren, blazing desert. Several buildings appeared up ahead. Some were log cabins, others were squarish adobe huts. Conrad saw corrals and barns. The outcast saints appeared to be making new lives for themselves in the valley. And they weren't alone. Conrad spotted a couple of women moving around the cabins. Selena wouldn't be the only female. He wondered if those women had run away from Juniper Canyon, too. If that was the case, it wasn't surprising Elder Hyssop was getting upset. He had to be worried about losing so many marriageable women from his community. One thing you needed in a society where men took multiple wives was plenty of women, Conrad thought wryly. Kingman took them to the largest of the log cabins. As he reined in, he turned to Selena.
This is our new home. I built it especially for you.
Oh, it's fine, Daniel. Really fine. I'm sure we'll be happy here. But you could make an even better start in our new life by letting my friends go.
In due time.
Conrad had a hunch Kingman would never let him and Arturo go now that they knew the location of the Valley of the Outcast Saints. He would be too afraid they'd expose the place to Hyssop and Leatherwood. Whether Selena realized it or not, her husband didn't intend to allow the prisoners to ever leave the valley. At least, not alive. Kingman turned to Ollie.
Take several men and put these two in the smokehouse.
Well, wait a minute. You're going to lock them up?
Just until we can be certain they're trustworthy. It's for their own protection as well. Some of the people here might not be inclined to be as tolerant of Gentiles as you are. They remember the things that have been done to believers in the past.
Well, I suppose you might be right about that.
She turned to Conrad and Arturo.
I'm sorry about this. I'm sure it won't be for long.
Conrad suspected she was right about that. A few nights from now, or maybe even tonight, Kingman would have the prisoners taken out and killed, and their bodies disposed of so no one would ever find them. Then he could tell Selena he had decided to let them go. She might wonder why Conrad and Arturo hadn't said goodbye to her before they left, but eventually she would convince herself it was better that way. The alternative would be too upsetting for her to consider. Kingman dismounted and stood next to Selena's horse, holding a hand up to her.
Come on, let me show you your new home.
She smiled at him and swung down from her saddle to take his hand. Together, they went into the log cabin. Ollie moved his horse up behind Conrad and Arturo.
Let's go, fellas. The smokehouse won't be that comfortable, but you'll see it ain't too bad.
Three more members of the group moved their mounts up so Conrad and Arturo were surrounded again. They had no choice but to heel their horses into motion. Ollie rode around them and led the way to another log building a couple of hundred yards from the cabin where Selena and Kingman had disappeared. The building had no windows, no way in or out except a thick door with a bar across it. The people of the valley might have built it as a place to smoke meat, but obviously, they'd had in mind it would make a sturdy prison, too. Conrad glanced over at Arturo and saw his friend and servant watching him.
We can't let them lock us up.
Arturo gave a tiny nod to show that he understood. He had figured out Kingman intended to have them killed. He had run across a number of evil men in recent years, including his own former employer. The odds were a little better. Some of the outcast saints had scattered to their homes when they arrived in the valley, leaving only Ollie and three men guarding the prisoners. Conrad thought if he could get his hands on Ollie's revolver, he could deal with the other men in a hurry. He didn't particularly want to kill them, but knew sooner or later, probably sooner, their zealotry would lead them to murder him and Arturo. Of course, even if they got away from their guardians, they would still be in the middle of the enemy stronghold. They would have to fight their way out. Conrad knew it was better to fight than to go meekly to their deaths. He managed to untie his hands. The bonds weren't that tight.
Here we are.
Ollie reined in front of the smokehouse. He turned in the saddle and moved his hand toward the butt of his gun.
If you fellas will just get off first. Yeah!
Instead of dismounting, Conrad suddenly dug his heels into his horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging forward.
Hey!
Ollie clawed at his revolver as Conrad's horse came right at him. Conrad kicked his feet free of the stirrups and left the saddle in a diving tackle that sent him crashing into Ollie. The unexpected impact drove Ollie backward out of his saddle. He crashed to the ground with Conrad on top of him. Conrad's left hand locked around the wrist of Ollie's gun hand, and his bunched right fist slammed down into the man's broad face. Snatching Ollie's gun from his holster, Conrad rolled away from him and came up on one knee with the revolver leveled and ready to fire. Conrad had been too busy with Ollie to know what Arturo was doing. His heart sank as he saw his friend lying face down on the ground with one of the outcast saints on top of him. The man's knee dug into Arturo's back with painful force, and a gun barrel was pressed against the back of Arturo's head. In addition, the other two men had whipped out their guns and pointed them at Conrad. He knew he was only a whisker away from being fired on.
Drop it! Right now!
Better do what he says, mister. If you don't, he'll blow your friend's brains out.
Back up the road, the door of Kingman's cabin flew open and the young man rushed out. If Kingman had the chance, he would order his men to shoot and be done with the problem. Before that could happen, Conrad lowered Ollie's Colt and put it on the ground in front of him.
Take it easy.
Conrad lifted both hands into the air.
Let off on that trigger, will you?
I'm sorry, sir. I tried to grapple with one of these men and get his gun, but I'm not strong enough or fast enough.
Don't worry about it, Arturo. We did what we could.
Kingman ran up.
What's going on here? Can't you handle a simple job like locking these two up, Ollie?
Behind him, Selena had stepped out of the cabin, too. Conrad saw her gaze worriedly toward the smokehouse. She raised a clenched hand and pressed it to the front of her shirt. Ollie climbed to his feet and brushed himself off.
I'm sorry, Dan. This fella Browning, well, he moves just about as fast as anybody I've ever seen. When he jumped me, it was like a rattlesnake striking.
Ollie picked up his gun and slipped it back into its holster.
I don't care how fast he is. You shouldn't have let him get close enough to jump you.
Kingman jerked a hand toward Arturo.
Get that one on his feet.
He turned to Conrad, who had stood up while the other guards covered him.
If you wanted to convince me to trust you, Browning, this was the wrong way to go about it.
We both know what you've got in mind, Kingman. Trust doesn't enter into it. You just want her to think that.
Kingman paled at that. He turned to Ollie.
Lock them up like I told you. Think you can manage that?
Sure, Dan.
Ollie lifted the bar from the brackets attached to the smokehouse wall on either side of the door. He leaned the bar against the wall and swung the door out.
Get in there, you two.
The man holding the gun to Arturo's head dragged him to his feet and prodded him forward. Conrad went in first. With both of them inside, they closed the door, plunging them into thick darkness. Conrad heard the sound as Ollie replaced the bar in its brackets. There were some tiny chinks here and there in the mud that plastered the logs together. Those gaps let in a few shafts of light that served to relieve the Stygian gloom slightly. As Conrad's eyes adjusted to the darkness, he saw the racks where sides of beef hung while they were being cured by the smoke from a fire in the pit in the center of the floor. Those racks were empty at the moment, and only cold ashes were in the fire pit. The only unlucky creatures in the smokehouse were himself and Arturo.
Clearly, attempting to assist Miss Webster was an unfortunate and unwise decision on our part.
It was my fault. You just went along.
Well, of course. As your employee, it is my job to follow your orders.
I thought we'd established that you and I are friends, too. And a friend can tell another friend that he's about to do a damn fool thing.
Yes, but don't you see you had no choice in the matter?
How do you figure that?
Oh, you forget, sir, that I've stood guard many times while you slept. I've heard the results of the dreams that occur to you in your slumber.
You mean I talk in my sleep?
Well, not in any real coherent fashion. But I've been able to make out enough words and phrases to know that your late wife's death still haunts you. It's really no surprise when you're faced with a dilemma. You want to choose whatever course you believe she would have had you choose. I hope I am not speaking out of turn here by saying these things, sir. As you yourself just brought up, we are friends.
Smiling, Conrad reached out in the darkness and found Arturo's shoulder. He squeezed it briefly.
You're not speaking out of turn at all, amigo. It's time for us to start thinking about how we're going to get out of here.
Over the next few hours, Conrad inspected every inch of the smokehouse using his hands and what little he could see. He even climbed up on the drying racks, balancing precariously while he poked at the roof. He was looking for a weak spot, anywhere he might make a little hole, then enlarge it into an opening big enough for him and Arturo to escape. He knew that was a real long shot, but it was better than sitting there doing nothing. While Conrad carried out that search, Arturo investigated the possibility of digging out underneath one of the walls. Conrad considered that pretty unlikely, but what he was doing was probably going to be futile too. He didn't discourage Arturo. After the time passed, they both met each other back at the main door.
I can't find any place where we might be able to get out.
Nor can I. It appears that when the outcast saints built this structure, they dug down and sunk the first log several inches in the ground. And the dirt is packed so hard, I'm not sure we could dig out even if we had a shovel, let alone with our bare fingers and a pocket knife. Given months, we might burrow a tunnel like moles, but we don't have months, do we?
Not likely. It wouldn't surprise me if Kingman decided to get rid of us tonight.
Won't our abrupt departure make Miss Webster suspicious?
I'm sure it will. What can she do?
Yes, she's cast her lot with young Mr. Kingman. She can't very well admit, even to herself, that he may be as ruthless as that oddly named religious leader from whom she escaped.
Conrad thought about Elder Hyssop, and also about the leader of the Avenging Angels, Jackson Leatherwood. He was convinced Leatherwood had gathered more men and set out once again from Juniper Canyon to search for Selena. What were the chances Leatherwood might find the valley before Kingman had Conrad and Arturo killed? Would they be any better off if Leatherwood showed up and wiped out the outcast saints? Not hardly, Conrad thought. Leatherwood had a grudge against him and Arturo, too. A blood debt to settle for the men they had killed. There was no getting around it. They didn't have a friend anywhere in that corner of Utah. The only person the least bit sympathetic to them, Selena, was powerless to aid them. Suddenly, Conrad heard footsteps approaching the smokehouse. Light still filtered through the tiny cracks in the walls, so he didn't think Kingman had sent his men to kill them just yet. He would wait until after dark for that. But someone was definitely about to open the door. Conrad touched Arturo's arm.
Be ready for anything.
As the door swung open and let in a rectangle of light blinding the two men who had been shut up in darkness for hours, Conrad wasn't prepared for what Ollie said.
Come on out, you two. You've got an invite for dinner.
Conrad and Arturo lifted their hands and shaded their eyes as they hung back in the smokehouse to let themselves get used to the light. Though Conrad couldn't see the big blonde man, he was confident Ollie wasn't alone. He figured there were several men with guns pointed at the prisoners. As his eyes began to adjust and he lowered his hand to squint at their captors, he saw that he was right. Half a dozen men stood outside the smokehouse, including Ollie, who had a leveled revolver. Two men had handguns, while the other three weren't taking any chances. They each had 12-gauge greeners aimed at Conrad and Arturo.
Come on, Dan and Selena are expecting you. You don't want them to get tired of waiting.
Conrad and Arturo started out of the smokehouse.
Looks like we're going to dinner.
The condemned men ate a hearty last meal.
What are you two saying?
Nothing important, Ollie. What's your last name, anyway?
Barnstable. Sort of like barn and stable. I reckon one of my ancestors in England or some such place used to keep livestock.
That sounds like a plausible theory.
We're going to Kingman's house for dinner?
Conrad glanced at the sky and saw that the sun was low in the west. Another hour of daylight was left, no more.
That's right, let's go.
The group started toward Kingman's cabin.
I think it was Selena's idea. She doesn't think Dan's treated you all that good since you joined up with us.
Ollie, if Dan were here, I reckon he'd tell you to quit running your mouth so much. And these two fellas haven't joined up with us. They're Gentiles, and they're our prisoners.
Yeah, but only until Dan comes to an understanding with them.
For God's sake.
The man pointed at Conrad.
This one busted you in the snout a few hours ago.
For what it's worth, Ollie, I'm sorry I hit you.
See? Mr. Browning just didn't really understand what was going on.
The other men exchanged glances. Conrad knew what they were thinking. Somebody didn't understand what was going on, but it wasn't Conrad. They marched toward Kingman's cabin. Conrad saw quite a few people standing around the other cabins, watching them with great curiosity. He figured not many outsiders came here, and certainly not many Gentiles. Kingman was waiting for them and stepped onto the cabin's porch as the group came up. He had a smile on his face, but it didn't reach all the way to his eyes.
Come in, come in. I hope the past few hours haven't been too unpleasant. Selena has convinced me I'm being too cautious where you gentlemen are concerned. I thought that to make amends, we'd invite you to break bread with us. Then you can leave if you want to. Or you're welcome to stay a few days if you'd prefer.
We appreciate that.
Ollie, you and these other fellas can put your guns up and go on about your business. Mr. Browning and Mr. Vincenzo aren't going to cause any more trouble, are you?
That's right.
Conrad and Arturo went up the steps to the porch. Kingman stepped aside to hold out a hand and usher them in. Selena was waiting for them inside. She had changed from the men's clothing she had worn when she fled Juniper Canyon into a nice-looking gingham dress with a square-cut neckline. Conrad figured she had stuffed the dress and a few supplies into the saddlebags along with the money she'd stolen from Elder Hyssop.
Hello. We're so sorry about all the misunderstandings, aren't we, Dan?
Sure. I'd offer you a drink, but we don't indulge in spirits here. We have some nice cool buttermilk, though.
That would be fine.
Dinner's almost ready. Why don't we sit down?
Kingman made it sound like he was entertaining them in a luxurious parlor in a mansion on Beacon Hill, instead of a log cabin in an isolated valley in the rugged Utah-Nevada border country. To be fair, the cabin appeared to be well-built and comfortably furnished, with a nice table and several sturdy chairs. A rug lay on the puncheon floor. A couple of oil lamps lit the room. Conrad wondered how all these things had gotten there. Selena poured glasses of buttermilk for them. Conrad, Arturo, and Kingman sat at the table while Selena went back to the stove, where a pot of something that smelled good was simmering.
Looks like you've got a nice little community here. Do you plan to stay in this valley permanently?
Why would we leave? There's fertile ground for farming and plenty of graze for cattle. We can live comfortably here.
I didn't see any livestock when we were riding in.
We'll put together a herd later on. First thing we had to do is get the cabins built and establish ourselves here.
There's one other thing most of the men are lacking. Wives.
Selena turned at the stove.
There are several other women here.
You can't count on enough of them getting away from Juniper Canyon like you did, though.
I'm not sure this is any of your business, Browning. We're trying to be hospitable here.
Sorry. Didn't mean any offense.
He didn't care whether he offended Kingman, but he didn't want to upset Selena. She would be upset soon enough when she realized the man she thought of as her husband was a rustler and an outlaw. Selena dished up bowls of stew with chunks of venison, potatoes, carrots, and wild onions swimming in it, and set a plate full of thick slices of bread on the table. Kingman explained they sent out hunting parties for fresh meat. He said grace before they ate, and then everyone dug in.
Where were the two you headed when you stopped to help Selena?
They were on their way to California. Isn't that what you said, Conrad?
That's right. We're bound for San Francisco, but there's no real hurry.
You have business there?
That's right.
Well, we don't want to keep you. You're free to go whenever you like. Only thing I ask is you don't say anything to anybody about what you've seen here.
Fair enough.
You'll be leaving first thing in the morning, then?
We'll see.
Dan, it sounds like you're trying to get rid of them. That's not very hospitable.
I'm just trying not to inconvenience our guests.
Daniel spread his hands as if his intentions were perfectly honorable and innocent. Conrad didn't believe that for a second. The rest of the evening was somewhat awkward. Conrad and Kingman continued to be polite to each other, but the tension between them was still there. A short while later, the meal was finally over.
I've set aside one of the cabins for you tonight. We can't expect you to sleep in that smokehouse.
We appreciate that, don't we, Arturo?
Most definitely. You rugged frontiersmen may have mastered the art of sleeping on hard ground, but I never have.
Well, you don't have to worry about that. I'll have some of the men show you where the cabin is.
Thank you for the meal. It was very good.
Quite appetizing.
It's the least we could do, considering how you two saved me from being taken back to Juniper Canyon.
Kingman ushered them out.